Man Cave.
Yo, welcome back.
Man Cave. Yes,
what's
sir.
Poppin'? What's poppin'?
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to the Man Cave podcast.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is your boy, West Coast Rail, coming straight out of Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yeah. Your man, you know what I'm saying? The man, the myth, the legend, the big Wenzel, the voice. Man, welcome back, people.
Yes, sir. Yes. Today's topic, we're gonna focus our energy into something else today.
Let them know.
We really gotta dig in deep. It's been trending all over Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. It doesn't matter. Everybody's giving their opinion and their reaction to it. So I know the people out there, they wanna hear our reaction to it. The Netflix docuseries, When They See Us.
Yes.
Which is based on the rape of the jogger case, the Central Park jogger case.
Yeah.
Which included the Central Park Five boys who were exonerated of rape and murder after spending countless years in prison. Ava DuVernay directed it. I think she did one of her best jobs ever.
Oh, man, great job. Awesome.
I think that she was awesome in the way that she told each of their stories.
Yep.
You felt like you knew those boys after you see this film. So I think that she did a fantastic job of telling the boys' side of the story and not the police or the DA's side of the story.
Yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely, man. I think when we talk about depicting an image, right, and you're thinking about how can you keep a story that is, first of all, it's a true story, which makes it that much more intense because these are all actual events that happen, right? So you're thinking, you know, how, you know, when you think about how you embody a situation of this dire circumstance, and you know, it's sad, the story's sad on all parts, man. You think about all the counts except for obviously the lawyers, we'll get to them, but
right,
when you think about how malice a crime this was for a 28 year old investment banker, Trisha Mailey, this case was based on, you know, the assault and rape of Trisha Mailey, a white woman who was jogging in Central Park, and according to authorities, 30 teenagers were in the park, you know, committing multiple crimes, assault, robbery, rioting, rape, sexual abuse, attempted murder, just beating up, you know, people riding their bikes through the park, just all types of crazy stuff.
And, right, that was wilding.
And I mean, you know, the majority of that might have been true, but what they lacked to do was to go by the rules of the Constitution and of the human, you know, just basic human rights, man.
Yep.
When you think about kids going into precincts and being abused and being forced and coerced into, basically putting themselves in prison.
Yes, that's exactly what happened here. Yeah. The police department, they were just being shysty. I don't know if they just wanted their convictions were getting low. Like they said in the movie that there were a lot of rapes that were happening in New York City at that time.
Right.
So they had the pressure of, you know, the politicians and the public to really get something done here. You know what I'm saying? So it was unfortunate. A lot of people say that those boys were wrong place, wrong time. But the way that it ended up being, I'm still trying to find it hard to convict. If I was a juror, I could not convict those boys of what the DA's office was giving me at that trial. There's no way that I say, yes, those boys did it. There was no physical DNA evidence anywhere. No one had anything out with a crime that bloody and that gory.
Yeah.
For no drop of blood to be on nobody's pants, nobody's shirt, no one has nothing. Yeah. There's nothing that you can pin those boys on. But, you know, when they were just, when the DA's office and the, you know, when the detectives were definitely being forced to get some results.
Right.
Yeah. These boys became the victim. And my thing is, as random as it is, these five guys except for two of them, didn't even know each other. So I'm in my mind like, how did they pick these boys out of the 30 boys that they, black and brown kids that they arrested within that time frame? Like, why did they, these five, be, you know, get to be your targets, you know?
Well, you just had to land on somebody. You know, they land on one guy, he points to this guy. They're playing the web game, right? And the only thing that mattered at the time, in the 1980s, 1990s, was that there was a 28-year-old white woman, right, that was raped and left for dead. Not murdered, left for dead. Now, in this country, black women, 28, 15, 12, 9, 4, 36, doesn't matter. They've been going through this same thing for hundreds of years. And you've never heard of something this big as the Central Park Jogger case. And it's all because it was centered around young black and Latino men and one white woman. Had it been the other way around, this wouldn't even be a, it wouldn't be a Netflix series. It never would have been published.
Nope. Not at all. It wouldn't have never been talked about. Never would have got that many headlines, that many newspapers talking about it. Never. So never would have got that much coverage. But since it was a white woman, you know, it automatically gets blown out of proportion. Right. You know, but I'm not saying that rape is something that shouldn't be blown out of proportion. No, but it should be fair across the board. It shouldn't matter if it's a white woman, black woman, Mexican, Indian. It doesn't matter. Like, rape and all that type of stuff should be publicized regardless of what color the victim is. But that wasn't the case, and it hasn't been the case for years. Yeah. So we're still in the same era. Yeah, nothing's really changed. Yeah. So,
in the movie, there is a lead prosecutor, former district attorney, and head of sex crime units of the mm-hmm. county of New York. Her name is Linda Fairstein, right?
Yeah, Linda. Nothing is fair.
Linda. Nothing is Fairstein is her trending name. You know, she's an American author, attorney, former New York City prosecutor, focusing on crimes against women and children, right? This is her baby, bread and butter. This is what she was hired to do. And so during her time of attorney for the state of New York, she oversaw the prosecution of the Central Park Five. And I believe that she took this case personal because it was a young white woman. You know, it could have been her, could have been her daughter, you know, anything like that. And she completely disregarded the laws of, you know, when you think about having the laws in place of due process, she completely went outside of the normal just to land a group of suspects and to land a conviction. She needed something to go off of. The city of New York, like you said, was crying out. They want answers. And you know, funny thing about that, right? So I personally believe that it's the city of New York's fault. When you're thinking about the governors, you're thinking about these heads of state and city, mayors and congressmen, people that aren't putting the money into the proper places. But never New York. Anytime that you have a city like New York, full of poverty, full of drugs, guess what, people? You're gonna have rape. You're gonna have murder.
Yeah.
You're gonna have robbery. You're gonna have rioting. Gonna have
it's crazy in New York. It's like you're either super rich or you're super poor. Like, you there, it's hard. It's kind of like living in LA if you think about it. It's very similar. It's like the population is so much and so little space.
Yeah, there's no. Yeah.
So it's, you know. You live in $1,500 a month, you get you a little shack, you know what I'm saying, in New York City. So it's just,
you got the rich living on top of the poor. And that's why you have 30, you know, 30 poor kids running through with nothing to do. Half of them aren't in school, and, you know, and just beating up people that they see, because guess what? They're a product of their environment. You made the environment, and because of that, Trisha, is your fault. Don't go outside of the law trying to configure and create an oblivious publishment for you to, you know, and find a platform for you guys to go out, and you think you have this brilliant police investigation that, you know, everybody comes out to find was corrupt from the beginning. It was vile from the beginning. It was something that never should have happened. And because you never found the real suspect in the case, you still had to make it sound like it was these guys. I think it was unfair. I think it's an injustice, and I think it's minimal, at minimum, something that needed to come out to tell just a piece, just a grain of sand of what black people in this country, in particular, young black men, have to deal with on a day-to-day basis in this country.
Yes, I completely agree with that. But we actually can talk about the actual movie now. We talk about the five boys that the police decided to pin these on. This case on was Antron McCray, Kevin Richardson, Raymond Santana, Corey Wise, and Yusef Salaam. And only Corey Wise and Yusef Salaam knew each other at the time. And Corey Wise was just coming to the police station just as a support. He was just being a good friend, coming down and looking after Yusef. So he wasn't even on the list.
Well, not just being a good friend either, though. But, you know, in our community, you know, if your mom, if we're like family, we don't have to be family, but if we're like family, and you see your friend or, you know, her mom, you know, his mom's son getting ready to go to the police station, you know that your mom's going to be like, hey, why don't you do something? Why don't you go with him? Why don't you tell us something? So Corey's reaction, I can't leave him. You know, he's like a brother to me. I have to go with him or I'm going to disappoint my mom and his mom.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, he was just, like I said, he was just being a loyal friend and just looking out. So the fact that he got, what we will discuss, he got the worst of it.
Yeah.
Is the most heartbreaking thing. I'll let you know right now, the Corey Wise, which is the fourth episode in this docuseries, directed by Ava DuVernay. So shouts out to her again. I was on and off with that one. It was very hard to watch someone go through that. Basically grow up. They all just grew up in the prison system. Corey Rise really grew up in the prison system. From 16 to about 32.
Yeah, he's been for a while.
He spent about 13 years in there, so you spent all your real developing, brain developing years in prison. Yeah. And for that, I see now Corey Wise is, I know he's not the same. You know what I'm saying? He's already said he's died and come back to life. So, you know, he's not even the same. And to be innocent of a crime and go through what he went through, and he knew he was innocent, it was the worst thing in the world, because it was just hard to watch him go through it all. Being such a young kid, going into Rikers, getting beat up all the time. Like, and rape is the worst thing to go into prison next to child molestation. Yeah. So I've worked with people who've been in prison and told me, like, bro, you'd rather kill yourself than go into prison.
Yeah, because in the other prisoners' eyes and in the guards' eyes, they're doing society a favor if they get rid of you.
And they were trying to get rid of Corey, and he almost died.
Multiple occasions.
And he, you know what I'm saying? He almost died. And he would have been, if he would have died and he would have been exonerated, what would the state of New York done then?
Yeah, I know.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what would they have done then? Like, I'm sorry, ma'am, your son didn't do it, but I know he died in prison. Our bad. Here's a couple $1 million. You know, you know, we're sorry. Like that don't count. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just what I couldn't grasp. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he would have died, you know what I'm saying? Like. It was just crazy.
And you know, so expanding on the Corey Wise situation, right? So there's speculation that Corey, first of all, it comes out in the series that he wasn't going to school, right? It was a struggle for him. He had a learning disability, and
yes, he got made fun of. He didn't really want to be in school. Yeah.
So you take that into consideration with him actually having hearing issues as well. You know, it's prison the last place this guy wants to be. It's the last place he wants to be, you know. And the most touching part about his story to me was seeing him acclimate himself to the prison system, because it's sad that a guy who, a kid who didn't do anything wrong, who was
at all
speaking to police on behalf of his friend Yusef, who wasn't built for this life at all.
at all.
You know, seeing him have to acclimate himself and become a true product of the prison system and spend so much time doing 23-and-1s, which for those of you who don't know, just means you're spending time in solitary, where you're mm-hmm. in your cell 23 hours out the day, getting 1 hour of free time. You know, mm-hmm. seeing him in the CO in the prison build a relationship with him because he knew that he didn't do it. People that yeah. spent time to get to know Corey in prison saw that this guy did not do this. He doesn't even have the capacity for
mental capacity to do that. Yeah.
I think it's sad what happened to him because there's no telling what the potential could have been for his life because he was a good kid. You know, I didn't know him personally, but from the visual, right. you know, he's this good kid who's just looking for his purpose in life. You know, as we all are as teenagers, but you know, sad because he's 16 years old. He's not even an adult, and he's going in to prison as a rapist, having never been in fights in his life. You know,
never been in trouble with the law, and they expected. You know what I'm saying? He went to Rikers. This ain't just prison. This is Rikers.
It's like the worst prison on the East Coast.
Ain't nothing but the worst prison, and he went in there at 16 years old. And got beat to hell, you know what I'm saying, multiple times by grown men. And what do you, know what I'm saying, what can you do as a kid? You know what I'm saying? You mess around, sock these motherfuckers in the jaw, you gonna get jumped by 30 of them. Like, it's just like, it's hell. And like you said, he's a rapist, and that's the worst thing to be accused of or convicted of in prison for. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to have that hanging over your head because the inmates will definitely have something for you. And that's nothing you want, man.
They always know who you are, what you did. And with a case like this, it was all over the news, you know.
There was no getting away from it.
First of all, people in prison, especially like the big guys, you know, the OGs, the Sobak D guys who've been there so long, they got all this mad respect and things like that. Last thing they want is this kid coming in that's more famous than them, you know, getting more attention than they're getting. You're a target automatically, even if you went in there with a different case, because you went in with such fame and all this stuff. Everybody knows who you are. You're a threat to them.
Yeah,
and I think that that's sad. But so there's a part in the movie that I particularly, became emotionally attached to watching this.
Okay.
It was when Corey was getting abused in the prison. I think it was the first or second incident, they sent him to the nurse to get checked on, and she is tending to his wound, as is her in her job description, and he's asking her, like, what do I do? Can you help me? Can you do anything? And she looks at him and says, hey, I did what I can do. I did my job. I'm sorry. Right. Anything else? And what she was saying was that if I help this kid who is hurting, breaking my heart to see him like this, because I know the case. I know he's not supposed to be here with these animals. But if I help him, I'm putting my life and my family's life in danger.
In danger. Yeah.
So that's just sad.
And it was the saddest thing. Yeah. You know, you say, what am I supposed to do? Just let them do whatever they want to do to me. You know what I'm saying? He said, she was like, you know, what the fuck am I supposed to say to you? Like, what the fuck you want me to say? I'm like, I was like, oh my God. And it was just, you know, he asked for a transfer. And it was the worst thing in the world, because it was like every time he asked for a transfer to go to
it got worse and worse.
It was a new ass whooping waiting for you.
Yeah.
A new corrupt guard or whoever.
Yeah,
you know
why he transferred out of the second facility, I don't understand.
That's exactly what I wanted to know too. Maybe because his moms couldn't come to visit him as much, because he moved from Rikers to another facility that was like 300 and something miles away, and his mom couldn't visit as much. You know what I'm saying? He was sad that he couldn't have her to come visit, because he was locked in solitary for a long time. You know what I'm saying? And you don't get no interaction with nobody. It'll drive you insane. And he was just fighting to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
And like you said, I wouldn't have done it. He moved again, thinking that, hey, I wanted to be closer so that she could visit more. And they moved him further away again. It was just like, it was even worse then. So, with that being said, I don't know. Like, he was just going crazy in that second prison. Like you said, that guard was trying to help him, and he did everything he could to try to, you know, normalize his life. You know what I'm saying? Because he tried to get him away from people. He didn't want to see him getting beat up because the Nazis was beating him up. And that was a setup from the jump. I want to know that part because he was the only black person in there with a bunch of white people. So I already knew that was a setup.
Yeah, and when you think about, when you talk about Corey having the mental capacity for things, he, you know, he's a kid, so he doesn't have the common sense to be like, man, they are not going to move me closer to the city because, first of all, why would they move me somewhere where I've been accused of rape and attempted murder? Mm-hmm. You know, why would they move me closer to a city that I've created harm in their eyes? I'm a villain to the city. The last thing that the city of New York is going to do is, hey, can you get Corey a little closer here?
You're right.
You know what I mean? But that goes with the immaturity and the not knowing and the lack of help that he had in the prison system to be able to make those grown-up decisions. He didn't have it. He didn't have it. And there was a point in the series where he is, you see the relationship between him and his mom. Because, I mean, Corey was loved by his mother. And it was sad because she didn't have the means, as a lot of black families deal with when a relative goes to prison, right? Because the prison systems, like Richard Pryor said, we go down to the court looking for justice, and that's what we find.
That's what you find. Just us.
When you think about the families that cannot afford nor find the resources or the grants or anything to be able to go and visit family members, some of them can't read and write to a family member. Some of them can't ask. Right. Some of them don't have family to ask family for a ride up there. Or, you know how it is. People ain't gonna give you a ride to prison. Come on, man.
Right. So the part that you were talking about was when he was asking for just $10, $20. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And she was like, boy, I ain't got nothing to give you. I was just like, damn, you can't even got $10?
Yeah. She was like, I don't have it.
You ain't got $10 on you, girl. You better go somewhere and go get some money. But it was hard back then for people. She's a single mother. You're right. So with that being said, I know it was hard on her, and that was hard on me to see because I know he was trying to protect himself at that point. Right. You know what I'm saying? He was getting beat up too much, and he was just like, that guard was like pounding him. You know what I'm saying? Let me know what you can do for me. I was like, what the hell? Like, that was some weird Rikers Island type stuff. Yeah. And that culture that he grew up in was the same, was still the same in 2010 with Khalif Browder. Who was accused and convicted. Oh, I don't even know if he was convicted. He was just accused of stealing a backpack and was held at Rikers Island for 3 years and got abused like you wouldn't believe, you know, got released and got justice, but then he killed himself because he just could never get those years back. You know what I'm saying? And it does something to people when you sit up there and get abused like that. Like, no one can go through that much abuse and think that they're just going to come out and be fine. You know what I'm saying? So, it was just crazy with that being said, but that is the Rikers Island system for you. I think it's gotten a little bit better, but still, I don't trust. If I would have been arrested and gone to Rikers, I would still have that same negative vibe. That, man, this is going to be a corrupt time. I got to fight every day just to survive out here, or I got to do some dirt or something like that. And it's no place for a 16-year-old, that's for sure. That's for grown men only, 21 and older. You 21 and older, you can go there. But it was just hard for me seeing that everybody else went to juvie and then he got stuck going to Rikers. And he is not tough at all. Right. Yeah, I did not know Corey was that short. Yeah. But Corey is short. He is not no tough guy. You know, I don't understand. I've never seen this, and excuse my ignorance if it comes out that way, but I've never seen a group of men rape a woman. How can I say this? Like something like that. Kill and rape a woman. I've never seen a pack of males do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, the only time we see something like that is in porn. Yeah, you know, not like the kill part, but no, I'm just saying, like, you see, like, gangbangs and shit like that, but it's just, it's not
a public out on the street.
It's not, like, exactly. It's not like that. Not like fighting for help and we gotta knock somebody out to do something. I don't, and they didn't even know each other. So the fact that the New York Police Department ended up doing it like this was just so wrong in so many
and
levels.
I think we have to touch on Antoine McRae as well, because he had another gripping effect in the series.
He did.
And so Antoine McRae was also 15 when he was falsely accused of the Central Park rape. He had a strange relationship with his father in the movie. Yes. It was very hard to watch being a father, because I don't understand how one man could leave his son and his mother in this type of situation, not being able to step up and not speaking for him no matter what's going on. And so in the movie, his dad is more concerned with his job than his son's well-being. And I think that's trash. He was played by Jamal Adepo, who was also in Fences, right? So this kid has a good resume. He wanted to capture his pain and those conflicting emotions he was going through during the trial, being the young Antoine, because it was so clear that he knew he was right and that he stood for the truth and he had hope. But, you know, all of the cards were just stacked against these guys, and Antoine especially, because he's in a situation where he has both parents, but one guy is absent in the trial. You know, that makes you look guilty. And in the jury's eyes, they're like, man, this guy's own dad don't want nothing to do with him.
I agree with that one, because it was, you're absolutely right. But the police department, see, his dad was, I don't know if he's a convicted felon, but he has a record, you know what I'm saying? That he was threatening to tell his job that, you know what I'm saying, that he hasn't told the truth about him ever being convicted of a crime or anything like that. But he said, it has been 5 years, I ain't been in no trouble. You know what I'm saying? So it was a slave mentality right there. That slave mentality kicked in right there, like, oh, master gonna, you know, he gonna get me if I don't, you know what I'm saying, if I don't do right. So let me go in here and let him know, like, bro, you better tell these people what they want to hear so you can go home. I'm trying to get your ass home. And it was just like, it was the wrong thing to do. Like, he was just, like you said, he was saving himself.
You know, Kuta Kinte relationship, trying to get him out of there, but not really thinking about what's the right thing to do. I mean, really, you have to stick up for your son. Just because they're saying you can go home doesn't mean that, look how it turned out. And, you know,
exactly. Yeah, and the home is the new prison system you're about to go to.
So there's a scene where his father actually gets up to testify in court, which I didn't even think that felons were able to give testimony in court, because it's a part of, you know, the judicial system that you cannot be a convicted felon, give testimony or anything like that. It becomes inadmissible because of your past. And I'm pretty sure that the court was aware of that, father. You know, you got to know that he was a felon. You know, they knew that. They hinted at it, you know, in the prosecution. So I know they knew that. I wonder if that was applied for them to get an upper hand, because they knew Dum Dum was going to say something stupid and put them in a bad spot. And really, it did. You think about testimony, it did not help them at all.
No, he was just basically saying that he wanted to get his son home. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, he knew damn well he shouldn't have done that. And that's why he felt guilty all those years. That's why he left right after the trial, because he just couldn't take the guilt. Like, I put my son in there. I let him down. I let him say these things, and that got him in trouble with the law. And I just can't deal with it anymore. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, Antoine McRae's father died, and, you know, he told another interview. He said that he never reconciled with his father. I don't even know if he even forgave him. You know what I'm saying? And if he ever listens to this, I hope he does. Like, I hope he just does in spirit, because his father was dying, and, you know, it was, in my mind, it was like a karma. It was like a karma thing that went down in my mind. Like, your guilt led you the path of sickness.
Right.
And, you know, I know that it was hard for Antoine to, you know, forgive his father, because he knew that his father was the real reason why he was in there. You know what I'm saying? It was just unfortunate. That was a real moment. All five of these boys, I don't know if we knew that much about Yusef.
Right.
But everybody else, we really got a chance to know and understand their lives in prison and outside.
Yeah, Yusuf was more closed off because he was more of like a more reserved guy. You know, he was the smarter kid. You know, he really wasn't supposed to be in the situation.
Right.
He had a good home.
At all.
Come from a good house.
He was about to go to college. He was going places. You know what I'm saying? And they took that from him. And that's what I was also mad at that, because that happens to people. You know, especially, you know, in those states in my mind. Another person that had an interesting story is Raymond Santana Jr.
Yeah, his story,
And with him, was he 14 or 15? 14.
Yeah,
he was 14. He was 14.
The arrest.
Yes.
And so, you know, but he, it's a little different for him. He received the maximum sentence for boys his age, which was 5 to 10 years in a youth correctional facility. And, you know,
he did 5 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did five years.
So he did 5 years. And when I talked earlier about being a product of your environment, so Raymond Santana, he goes into prison, comes out, you know, he's in shape, you know, but he's got the rape thing going against him. He's got the felony thing going
right.
on. It's hard to get a job. Hard to get a job.
Yes.
Right? So
afterwards, so, yeah, so, yes, it was very hard for him. And the scene where his PO was explaining to him in the restaurant, you know, that there was another felon that was working there. So if you just so happen to be scheduled at the same time and someone were to catch you, you can go right back to prison for that. And he was just like, yo, who the hell is supposed to hire me? He said, I don't know.
Yeah,
somebody.
Nobody
you know,
wants
you gotta
to
find,
deal
you know?
With those scheduling issues because it becomes a liability.
Exactly.
On their part. They're not going to deal with that.
Exactly.
And so,
exactly.
You know, being in these poverty neighborhoods, you know, he can step outside of his door and he sees some, you know, some buddies he knew from back in the day. You know, they're selling drugs, D-boys. And, you know, he's like, shit, man, you know, I got to get some
money in my pocket.
He's got a
you
girlfriend.
That's the only way.
He's got a girlfriend. She wants to move in. The pressure's on. You know, you're a convict. What do you do? I got to do what I know. I know that there's drugs and money in the neighborhood.
Yeah, and I think this is one of that was one of the scenes or one of the moments in the film that I think Ava DuVernay outdid herself and explained it to people that, hey, you were convicted. If you're convicted, especially a rape, now you gotta register as a level 3 sex offender. So it's
every year,
insanely hard.
Every 6 months.
Every year.
For the rest of
your life. And there's no getting off of that. There's no one going to hire you unless you're doing janitor work. It's for some low-end money. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's going to be that's at all. And it's mind-boggling to me. You know what I'm saying? So, with that being said, Raymond Santana had no choice. He was trying to get a job. No one would fucking hire him. So he had to go in a block and sell dope. And then he got arrested again. But, you know, he got out. He got exonerated while in prison again for selling drugs. You know, so I think they let him go as soon as he was exonerated because it went as time served.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So he got out, you know, off of, you know, being in there for 5 years. So, you know, by innocently. So, you know, they had to let him go free, be a free man. And having that off of your record really does help.
Think about how poorly these guys' lives would have been, the quality of life that they would have had, because when you are accused of sex crimes, you can only be, if there are going to be children present, they have to be family. Then there goes barbecues, right? Friends, family reunions, things like that. Like, that's like the only thing you can do is like a backyard barbecue with family. You can't go to the mall. You can't go to Chuck E. Cheese, take your kids. You know what I mean? Like, you can't go to the movie theater. Like, what do you do when you, if you come out of that situation, you have kids and they want to go somewhere? You can't go. Mom's got to take them. Like, how terrible is that they would do that to you?
I know.
Man. It boggles my mind to see somebody in that bad a situation. And his dad was a poor Latino, you know, who was trying to get by.
Yeah.
Again, they don't have the means, you know. So these kids get in these
situations. He had to get to work.
Yeah, these kids get in these situations, and there's nobody to help them. There's nobody to help
at
them
at all.
You know?
And that's what happens countless of times.
Now,
That you know, I'm pretty sure there's another movie that we haven't heard about, but that same thing happened to them. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a crazy thing that happened. It was a publicized event, but it showed you. Yeah. It shined a light on police corruption,
right?
At least, you know what I'm saying. So with that being said, man, it was just, I think that the movie itself was just so riveting. I also wanted to let the people know that the men were exonerated in 2002, yeah. They went to court to sue the city of New York, and that settlement got settled. Out of court for $41 million, which they had to split five ways. But I'm gonna get into that splitting of the money as well. They didn't get that settlement until 2014. So that was years and years of a battle for 41. Why did it, in my mind, I want to know, why did it take so long for you to settle that? Because
after you,
it really
after
should.
Exonerated and have served wrongful prison time, the yes. city of New York owes you that money. Meaning, you know, this being the caliber case it was, the city of New York was tying up the court system in all types of, just paperwork, documentation, so much, so many motions and things that had to be filed and granted. They just did not want to pay these guys. The turnaround in this case was so bad that it's just like, man, if you waited that long, like, they waited longer than it took them to get out of prison.
Exactly. And that is another injustice that I don't think people really harp on enough. I've never heard anybody on any radio station interview anything talk about that enough. Like, the city of New York was still corrupt. Like, and $41 million is low compared to what these men went through. Corey Wise, listen, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to start a petition. Corey Wise deserves $1 million for every single year he is alive from the city of New York. He still lives in the city of New York. Yeah. I wouldn't live in there. Everybody else left and went to Georgia, went down south somewhere because they just didn't want to be in the big city. I mean, I understand that scars you. You know what I'm saying? That scars you. You don't want to be around that no more. So I completely understand them wanting to get away from the corrupt system of New York City. So, and they did their thing. Corey Wise should definitely be getting $1 million every single year he is living from the state of New York because he went through the worst of it all. Out of all five, he went through the worst.
I mean, and at the very minimum, in my eyes, he should have at least got the $41 million himself.
Everybody else can scrap for what they.
Yeah, because everybody else.
Every year that was served. In my money, they should get $1 million for every year they serve. Corey Wise, once again, served the longest term, which is 12 or 13 years in prison, in different prisons, and I might add. So,
yeah, but the emotional.
With that being said, he should at least got 13.
He, you know, that's a $100 million case these days, you know. And the money, they didn't give what they were worth.
Deserved.
Yeah, they definitely didn't give what they deserved at all. And I believe that is just, you talk about injustice, man. I mean, that's, you know, it's just like the Rodney King case. You know, first you started off with, you know, $26 million, and he ended up with, you know, a lollipop, man. I mean, they essentially did the same thing to Central Park 5. I mean, if I had to wait another 10, 12 years of, you know, first of all, I didn't have a job while I was out, so I got to rebuild financial stability. And, you know, I'm still walking around trying to clear my name to people, you know, that I don't.
Exactly.
Come on, man. You owe me pain and suffering. You owe me so much money for them, man.
Yes.
They should
be
paying them out
so
for life.
More.
I think they should be getting paid out for life because it's the city of New York's fault. The city of New York should be paying them.
Yes. Yes. Agree. I completely agree. None of them should be broke or poor. Thank God that they were exonerated because maybe they got better jobs, you know what I'm saying? Because now you don't have that sex offender and all that stuff weighing over your head. So,
well, Yusuf was doing that.
With that being said, I know. Because Yusuf was a smart guy, period. So he ain't do nothing but get smarter, you know what I'm saying? So he wanted to teach, and I'm glad that he was able to do that or able to be free enough to do what he wanted to do because as a sex offender and all that other stuff. You had to go through so much. You can't do that.
I shouldn't have to go out and get a better job. I shouldn't have to want a better job. Because guess what? You took my childhood of my learning years from me. I don't have the education to go get a better job. I don't have the resources to go get a better job. I am a product of what you made me. So you need to take care of me because you did it wrongly. You admitted to it. You exonerated me. Now you have to take care of me.
Preach. Preach on, brother.
There's no way around it. I'm sorry. The city of New York needs to take care of them. They shouldn't have to pay for anything. They should not have to need or want for anything. Their family shouldn't have to need or want for anything because you took years away from them helping family. You took years away from them building bonds. Like, really, it should just, I mean, it's appalling. I'm not satisfied with it. Nobody should be. You know, if you are, then you just don't know. You don't know how much money the city actually has. Because that's not even a slap on the wrist.
That's not, There's been other people who've sued the city and gotten $50 million for one person. Like, one person got $50 million. So the fact that you wanted to split five, because this, you know what? The city of New York, I guess they will always think that those boys did it. Even though the person who admitted it, DNA is all over there, admitted to doing it, and he now, you know, he's the reason why they all five were released.
Right.
They still don't believe it. They're like, those boys had something to do with it. With no DNA evidence, nothing, like, there's no DNA evidence. Like, what do you mean they had something to do with it? Like, what were they doing? Did they all have on gloves?
Yeah.
I mean, there should be something with all that blood everywhere. There was nothing. So with that being said, if the city of New York, they still hold a grudge. That's why that $41 million was what it was. Because they were still holding a grudge. You know what I'm saying? It was like, yeah, you boys got off, but I still think you did it. So you're not going to get as much money as you think you are. And I think the city of New Yorkers is corrupt.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just bad. Like, they don't give a damn about black and brown people. They really don't.
Yeah. And actually, I think here's what happened. So the guys, so Kevin Richardson, Raymond Santandrea, and Antoine McCray sued the city for $250 million. For malicious prosecution, racial discrimination, emotional distress, and, you know, such and such. You know, not looking for a probable cause, you know, things that would build this case. And so while the running mayor of New York in 2013, Bill de Blasio, pledged to settle the case if he won the election. And so because he won the election, he decided to settle it. But the city announced that the settlement was only going to be for about $40 million in 2014, which is sad.
Wow.
So in December of 2014, the five men went back to court to sue for an additional $52 million in damages from the state of New York before Judge Alan Morin. So, you know, they're still fighting, you know, but, you know, did they get paid? No, not as of yet. No. So, I'm not seeing anything that says that they did, but, you know, on that regard, we also have to talk, speaking about the case, we can't let our leader of the free world go with this one, because on May 1st, on May 1st, 1989, Donald Trump, who was a real estate, savant, he was the guy for real estate.
Yes, he was the guy.
He called for the return of the death penalty in a full-page ad. In all four major newspapers. The advertisement cost about $85,000, which told you how serious he thought this was.
And he still stands to his decision that they did. They did it. You know, he still believes that. Like, it's white privilege at its finest, and it's just crazy. Like, it's just crazy that people. It's funny how white people don't want to apologize when they're wrong. It's funny. That's funny to me. Like, white people are just, in my mind, just godly figures in their own minds. They don't have to apologize for a motherfucking thing. They could be dead ass wrong. They're not going to apologize to nobody that don't look like them. They ain't about to say, I'm sorry to you. They ain't going to apologize for 40 years of slavery. Think they about to apologize for five young black and brown kids going to prison wrongfully? Shit.
Yeah, he did an interview in '89 with Larry King and said the problem with our society, quote, is the victim has absolutely no rights and the criminal has unbelievable rights. I don't understand where he's getting this from. Like this, this is our commander in chief today, and I believe that he's retarded on all accounts. If I have to say so, because he called for every criminal of every age that was accused of beating or raping a jogger in Central Park 12 days earlier to be afraid. You know, calling for the death penalty. It's like, you know, come on, guy. Like, you know, did you look at the evidence? Because a lot of times when you look at Trump and his administration, he's not even looking at the facts before he makes a decision on something, or, you know,
nope, it's all emotion.
So, you know, I just can't believe that we elected somebody like this to run our country. It's oblivious, man.
Well, I mean, it just means that anybody who's popular can win this, can be president in my mind. But with that being said, with wrapping this up, I wanted to ask you, since the Central Park Five jogger case, has it gotten better for black and brown boys at all nowadays? We're still facing some of the same things, but has it gotten worse or has it gotten a little bit
better? So here's my opinion on that, right? And this is just from going from, I could just go from events that have happened in the last 5 years. It's gotten worse.
Okay.
It's gotten a lot worse. You look at the ICE situation, you know, in Florida and other states where they're, you know, the border protection and how these children of these families, brown and different, are being separated from their parents, being sent to, I mean, you might as well call them concentration camps. That's what they are.
Yes, it is.
Kids are sitting out in vans in the middle of parking lots, just being held there in the hot sun, being made to sit in vans with no AC, waiting to be reunited with their parents. That isn't happening yet. We're still waiting for these parents. I mean, that's just one thing. But when you think about the cases of black men being shot, the cases of black men being killed in jail while they're awaiting to see a judge on a Monday, you know, not even making it to that. When I was moving back to Michigan from Vegas, there was a warning sent out nationwide that if you're a black male, do not drive through the state of Missouri because officers were killing black men on the side of the highway that were calling in for flat tires, needing help, things like that. There were three incidences where men just came up disappearing, you know, and nobody had answers. And then they ended up showing up, popping up dead in a jail cell out of nowhere. Come on, give me something to go off of to say that our country's gotten better. Because if I'm going through the day-to-day looking, if you look on CNN, people, if you get off the Love and Hip Hop and the reality channels and actually pay attention to what's going on in the world with these real issues, you will find yourself, without a reasonable shadow of a doubt, that the world is on the brink of destruction. Internally, the United States is getting ready to implode if this guy gets reelected for a second. Because you have to think, right now he's kind of being a little bit in check because he has to worry about a reelection. When his second term begins, he has no longer the worries of a reelection. He's going to do exactly what Bush did and go off the handle. And you can guarantee a nuclear war, something crazy to happen, because he has zero cares, zero fucks he's given. He is a true thug, and he has all the power in nuclear codes to make anything he wants to happen. Look at the Saudi deal that he's doing right now in weaponry, disregarding the Democrats, disregarding Congress, and going to say, hey, I don't care what they say, I'm selling guns to them. When has that ever worked?
I know. I mean, he's first off, in the government shutdown that he was doing was petty. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just, he's clearly
a sociopath.
He's not the guy, and I don't think he's gonna get reelected. So I know this for a fact. Black people really did not get out and vote, since they knew Obama wasn't gonna be on the ticket. Their passion to vote kind of wavered as well.
So what changes this time?
So with that being said, the fact that they don't want another four years of the bullshit that Donald Trump has given you.
But who are they going to vote for? Because, I mean, you look on the ticket.
They don't give a damn. But
here's the thing, though, right? Because Donald Trump is appealing to the American eye, because he's the opposite of an Obama, right? He's a guy who, hey, I said it and I mean it. I'm gonna do it, buddy. And I rally up all these people. Like, come on, man. White people gonna go out there and vote. You know, the country hicks that are down south that have been stopping African Americans from voting for hundreds of years, they are still hitting the polls hard. He's still winning those countries. But he's also appealing to the younger white generation because he's saying, hey, we can be rebels. We don't have to abide by laws. And if you look at their culture, the, you know, people who they followed influentially, even if you're talking about entertainers, artists, they've been rebels. You know, so you just look at the history of this country, and he is exactly what this country has always wanted. A thug, somebody who is going to get in office. He's going to do what he wants. He doesn't care about Democrats because, you know, the white Republicans, they don't care about the Democrats. I'm going to go with this guy. He don't care about him either. That's a good vote for me. And it continued downhill. And when you have generational beliefs and that, you know, the conservatives and things like that, that you want to bring down the health of the middle class and below and raise up your like neighborhoods and such, you know, this is your guy. This is who you want in office. And it's sad because, you know, right now all you have to do is be the more trending candidate to win. You don't have to have the stronger case. You don't have to have the stronger belief system, or you don't have to have better policies. You know, I remember in 08 when Obama was running for office, it was all about whose policies were better. Well, I like his policy. Even though we were going to vote for him anyway because he was black. We had to have something to go back to work and say, hey, I voted because of this. Not just because he was black, but because he believes in A, you know, X, Y, Z. And nobody cares about Trump's stance on anything. It's just, hey, he talked more crap in the debate than Mitt Romney. Or, you know, it's
very dumb. But I think that we're not going to be as dumb anymore. I don't believe that he will be reelected. I think that, you know, there's some Republicans that don't even like Donald Trump. So with that being said, because, I mean, he's just not president material. I mean, even if he was a bad president, as long as he had some experience of doing some dumb stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, Donald Trump has no experience of, you know, being in, you know, anything, a mayor, any type of politician at all. So it really shook the White House, you know what I'm saying? Like, he is putting a real light on the racism in America. Like, there has been more white outburst of racism from the barbecue lady that they called on the black people because they were barbecuing in a park, in a public park. It was just that type of ignorance is what got, you know, even greater. You know what I'm saying? White people are not afraid of black people anymore. And that might be a scary thing for us. You know what I'm saying? So you know, we definitely have to get him out of there just for the simple fact that with him in office, white people are way more bolder and can get away with a lot more other stuff, a lot more criminal stuff.
I mean, with Donald Trump, all politicians are dirty too, though. So, but in order to get rid of Donald Trump, you have to give the people something else to vote for.
Now, I'm sure they will. They will eventually. When they come down to it, they'll find somebody. Trust me.
Yeah, okay.
We gotta have faith in this somehow, because
I'm losing faith in America.
It could get worse, but I mean, well, hey, I mean, I understand it. I am too. But you know, I just think that you know, I'm going to vote next year for sure, and make sure that Donald Trump is not in office. I think we all have to just do our part.
Yeah,
and just have faith, man. Just have faith. Just go out and vote and have faith, man. It'll work itself out in the end. But, you know, we just got to make sure we don't make that mistake again at all. At all. So, yeah. Thank you, podcast listeners. This one was a deep one for us. We really dove deep into this one.
Yep.
Just want to thank y'all for, you know, hanging in there, listening to us this long. We will be giving you way more different topics. We're not going to just stay on sports. We're going to tackle everything head on, different subjects coming your way. We still want your feedback. Let us know if we can improve on anything. Let us know what you think about the podcast in general.
Yeah,
we definitely want to hear from you. We will be back giving you more podcasts and more topics next week for sure. Stay tuned.
Hit us up on all social media, man. Don't forget Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook. Follow us on Apple Podcasts. Spotify, Anchor FM, anywhere you can get a podcast, man, look for us. We will be there. 100%.
Yes. Man, thank you. Man, Kate. Feet.